This is Progressive Radio, a weekly conversation hosted by Matthew Rothschild, editor of The Progressive Magazine, a leading voice for peace and social justice. For more information about Progressive Radio or The Progressive Magazine, log on to our website at progressive.org.
I'm Matt Rothschild, and welcome to Progressive Radio, which you can also listen to over at progressive.org. It's a real privilege for me to have in the studio right now the one and only Ani DeFranco, the singer-songwriter, founder of her own Righteous Babe record label and defiant voice of activism. This summer, Ani DeFranco received Now's Woman of Courage Award. DeFranco has released, by my count, 21 CDs, maybe more, of our own music.
I lost count. I don't know.
Her latest is Reprieve. Ani DeFranco, welcome to Progressive Radio.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
It's great to see you. That's more than one CD a year. How do you manage to pull that off?
Geez, I don't know. Youthful vim and vigor, which seems to be waning slightly these days. But
the ideas for the stories keep coming in your mind?
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm actually pregnant right now, and I have been writing a little less. It's funny that, you know, just to whatever, the last 5 months, I guess the act of creation that I'm already undergoing is kind of taking a bunch of my energy. So a few less stories coming out, but.
And are those stories, poems, songs, some of them about being pregnant?
Well, it's certainly, in the forefront of my mind, you know, so, I think it was so on that last record I made, Reprieve, you know, in that sort of foreshadowing way that writing has of, you know, operating. I've often noted that in my own work.
No, you weren't pregnant at the time when you wrote this song?
Wasn't pregnant when I was writing that little body of work, but, I've often noticed that my work kind of knows things about myself that I don't consciously know. You know, I'll find myself writing stories that I don't even understand at the time, and then they happen.
Your subconscious is ahead of you.
Yeah.
In that song, you call having a child the most radical thing you can do. Mm. And do you want to explain that?
Well, I mean, the act of reproduction of creation is pretty revelating, you know, physically and in every sense, spiritually, I think too, if it's allowed to happen, you know. I mean, these days, you know, with this combination of technology and patriarchy and the medicalization and sort of, you know, women have been too often sort of ejected from that seat of power, I think. You know, you just get sort of brought into this artificial environment, strapped down and have it cut out of you, and that whole transformative experience, which, you know, in which our greatest pain becomes our greatest transcendence and transmutes into our greatest power, is taken away, you know. And I think, you know, I'm new. This is my first, but I already feel pretty revelated, you know, just by the experience of being pregnant. And
you're flipping the idea of pregnancy around, because in traditional patriarchy, you know, having a woman be pregnant is putting her in her place. But you are trying to restore that place to a position of power.
Yeah, well, I mean, it certainly is, ain't it? You know, I mean, it's kind of magic. And I think, that's can be very threatening stuff, you know, for a power structure and, you know, so therefore the controlling of it and the, you know, the sort of assuming that power, taking that power back, has been a quest of, you know, the sort of darker side of patriarchal culture. But, you know, I think, you know, that's sort of, you know, the whole, just the circumstance of having a reproductive system, you know, everything that comes with it, you know, the hormones, you know, the monthly emotionalism, everything that's, you know, we look at as a woman's weakness. You know, I think a holistic view is to understand that as also a great power, you know, and a, you know, the irrational perception of women, you know, due to that biological state is also, I think, a great wisdom, you know, on its flip side. You know, I think, you know, it makes a lot of sense to cry when you watch the news, you know. And the supposed rational alternative is quite insane if you think about it.
You, in that very same song, you say, in the face of the great farce of the nuclear age, feminism isn't about equality, it's about reprieve. Do you want to elaborate on that, Ani DeFranco?
Yeah, well, I guess I've just, you know, I've been, you know, we're just faced these days in this time and place with so many crises, you know, and together we are just at a loss, you know. I mean, how do you even begin? You know, here we are with, you know, making war, you know, and you know the environment. You know, we're all about to slip into the sea. You know, the plundering of the environment has led to this crisis of global warming, et cetera, and you know these forces of racism that are still so vehement in our society that, you know, things like, you know, what's gone down in the Mississippi Gulf Coast this last year, it's just right in our face, you know, how many social diseases are really becoming extreme and life-threatening. So more and more, I look at them all through this lens, I guess, basically, of a fundamental imbalance, you know. I guess, you know, the longer I live, you know, the more I come back to that sort of essential political understanding I had as a young pup, you know, which is that the power dynamic between men and women really needs to be addressed before any of these other manifestations can be healed. You know, I mean, what is war, you know, except for patriarchy run amok? You know, what is fundamentalism? You know, it's very much just a cloak of patriarchy. And so all of, you know, that sort of the hierarchy that leads to, you know, or that sense of individualism that leads to hierarchy, that leads to aggression, that, you know, I mean, I think all of this is very much related to the fundamental imbalance. And so, you know, that poem just talks about, you know, I think that feminism, you know, that addressing the reality of patriarchy is something we all have to do, you know, to save all our, you know, it's not just for chicks anymore, you know.
Ani DeFranco is my guest today on Progressive Radio. I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine. You write about patriarchy explicitly on the CD, Reprieve. Mm. You say patriarchy is shaming women and making war. Why haven't we been able to get at that sucker? Why has patriarchy grown over the last, reasserted itself over the last 20 years? You talk about the rise of fundamentalism. We got George Bush, Dick Cheney, who are the poster boys for patriarchy.
Yeah, right? Well, you know, I think it's not accidental that we don't use the word feminism anymore, that even, you know, young women don't identify as feminists, let alone all of us, you know. You would think at this point that we'd all embrace that term, you know, all of us civilized people who consider women people too, you know. It's very simple stuff. You look it up in the dictionary and it's, you know, the belief that women should have rights and opportunities equal to that of men. Not very radical stuff. Seems pretty basic. And yet, we deny it again and again. We don't call ourselves feminists, you know. And I think, again, that's not accidental. It's a result of a deliberate conservative campaign, you know, of the Reagan-Bush years, which really worked very hard to marginalize that word, therefore that concept, therefore that movement, you know, and make it taboo and ugly and passé and all these other things, you know.
Well, where is that movement today? And you, Ani DeFranco, have been a bridge to a younger generation of feminists. How would you assess where it is right now?
Well, I would say hopefully in a state of recovery. You know, you mentioned that the National Organization for Women conference that I found myself at recently, and it was really very apparent. You know, you had your old guard, you had some 50-something, 60-something-year-old women that have been, you know, doing the work of feminism for many years, and then you had young women, you know, early 20s, teenagers, you know, just showing up, getting involved.
Well, that's encouraging.
Investigating, though. Yes, encouraging, but also very indicative of that huge gap You know, I felt like the only 35-year-old in the room. You know, like what? There was a definite break in the continuum, I think, due to that cultural campaign.
And people in your age group, do you see them not embracing feminism explicitly anymore, or are they coming back to it?
Well, actually, I see a lot of them at my shows embracing it pretty pretty joyously, male and female, you know. But I fear that, you know, in terms of our generation, we're a bit in a minority. You know, there was that conservative backlash that I think we're just barely recovering from.
You write in one of your songs, we've been looking for the answer to war in the wrong place.
Yeah.
What is the right place? Where to look?
Well,
or do you want to look right here?
Well, once again, I feel that, you know, there's just no such thing as peace within patriarchy. You know, it's a fundamentally imbalanced, violent, system. So, you know, we need to together address the reality of patriarchy. You know, it sort of feels to me like that elephant in the room, you know, that is so much, it's so fundamental to our society, and so global that we almost don't see it anymore or recognize how powerful its forces are. And so I think, you know, peace, the older I get, the more I understand peace to truly be a product of balance. You know, not perfection. You know, we don't have to have complete nonviolence or complete pristine, you know, perfection in it. But peace is balance, whether you're talking about an ecosystem, a body, political, international politics, you know, economics, just balance. That's all we need to achieve. And I think, addressing the fundamental imbalance of you know, patriarchy would serve us all. You know, I think these social diseases such as war and environmental doom, and they're not any good for men. They're no fun for men. So I think together, you know, if we sort of get to the root of the imbalance and start working from there, it will benefit us all.
You're now in New Orleans, right? Were you there for Katrina?
I was, yeah.
What was that like?
Well, it was, as you might imagine, you know, I got a close-up look at the shocking reality of our government, you know, of the state of our society right now. I evacuated the night before the storm. I got in that last wave of contraflow traffic.
Was it a huge traffic jam?
Yeah, yeah. Oh my gosh, people were on the road for incredible amounts of time, and we, of course, were sort of holdouts. We were like, whatever, you know. But then everyone else we knew had left town, and everyone, you know, there's 20 messages on our phone saying, get out, get out, get out. So we thought, ugh, okay, the power will be out. It'll be a drag. We'll leave for a few days. We'll come back, which is what everybody thought. You know, no one prepared to leave for months.
When did you get back?
Well, one of the things that we didn't do was take things like master tapes. You know, I was in the middle of making Reprieve. I was in the middle of a Hamill on Trial record that I was making with my friend Ed Hamill. You know, we had all kind of, records that were we left behind to, we didn't know what, you know, as the reports started coming in and the flooding and the chaos. And, you know, me and my partner looked at each other and we were like, oh no, the masters. So we drove back in. We actually returned that week, past a few roadblocks. You know, I mean, they had like six guys trying to lock down the city. It was ridiculous. So, you know, we got in actually pretty easily. And
what was the state of the city when you got in there?
It was chaos. It was anarchy. There was just really a lot of poor people, abandoned, confused, homeless, thirsty, you know, taking refuge under or on bridges, you know. I mean, it was exactly what you think. You know, it was the poorest segment of the population. It was by and large African American. People were literally being prevented from walking out of town. You know, the Mississippi River Bridge was passable. We drove over it to come back into town. And the people who were trying to walk across it to get out were being turned back at gunpoint by the local police force. So we saw no army, no National Guard, no FEMA. This was on Thursday. You know, the storm hit Monday morning. It was completely unconscionable. There was no reason why relief workers were not in there, you know, helping people out and saving lives. As we can testify from cruising in a compact car, it was easy to get in.
What's it like now?
Well, it's an ongoing heartache. It's also an ongoing inspiration to see people helping each other, you know, transcending, rebuilding their lives with no institutional help, you know. It's kind of a sickening thing to watch people try to rebuild their lives, you know, rebuild their homes when the levees are the same. You know, I mean, there's even if you have the money or the means to try and reconstruct the pieces of your life, you have no reassurance that this isn't going to happen next year or the year after. You know, they patch the holes, you know, so people are valiantly trying to fight, you know, the Corps of Engineers, the levee boards, the local politics, the state politics, you know, try and get adequate infrastructure, you know, so that we can live with some semblance of security there.
And you see them, the city officials or the economic powers that be, trying to stiff arm the African American community that had to flee from coming back?
Yep, there's a lot of just complete disregard. You know, there's no assistance to help that segment of the population back. You know, they're housing projects that were quite nightmarish to begin with, admittedly. You know, I mean, these are not fun places to live, but they are closed still for no reason. You know, I mean, there's areas of town where you have low income housing where the electricity is back. You know, it is possible to reopen these projects, but they're not, you know, and so, yeah, there's just a real lack of help or assistance, you know, to get, you know, the lifeblood of New Orleans population back and flowing.
You're listening, Donnie DeFranco. This is Progressive Radio. I'm Matt Rothschild. In Reprieve, your latest CD, you have a song, Millennium Theater, that talks about the ice caps melting and New Orleans biding her time. Did you write those lines prior to Katrina?
Yeah, prior to the storm, one of those foreshadowing, you know, moments in my work again, just, you know. But, you know, it's not any great prophecy on my part. We all knew, we all knew it was coming. You know, that's the real shocker, is that, you know, scientists have been telling us for years that this bowl is going to fill, you know, and the truth is it didn't take a Category 5. You know, Katrina was, what, a 2 or something when it made landfall. So it was really much worse than even projected. But, you know, just while we're talking about New Orleans and all of this, I just want to say that there is so much that we can do, you know, from all over the country. I mean, there's so many organizations at work down there doing great work. Habitat for Humanity, you can show up for a weekend, a week, you know, and they'll hand you a hammer and a mask and put you to work. And even if you don't have the time or energy to, you know, take part in that direct reconstruction, anybody who has a vacation time coming up, just go to New Orleans, party, you know, tip a waitress, buy a meal. You know, there's people there, you know, the people who are trying to, you know, reconstruct their businesses and their lives. You know, we need any economic infusion we can get. So I'm telling you, just to show up in New Orleans and have a good time is a help.
Annie DeFranco urging us to help out in New Orleans. That same Millennium Theater song that you wrote, Ani, you talk about the impeachment, the necessity to impeach Bush and Cheney. Do you want to give a short indictment?
Well, actually, that's not what that song's talking about.
All right, help me out.
It's Millennium Theater, so it's set at the turn of the century, and the impeachment is that circus that surrounded Clinton. In this particular time, it's you hear the word impeachment, and anyone hopeful and desperate and conscious immediately thinks of Bush. And of course, coming from a progressive mouth like mine, there's a knee jerk. But if you listen to the lyrics of the song, it's about. What's the song say? Leak it out about the president. It's Clinton it's that whole scenario that I'm talking about. And then pull the coattails out from under that little VP, you know? I think, that whole impeachment circus and, the whole blowjob business was all about, basically unseating, Gore. And skewing the whole political election that was forthcoming, and that very calculated campaign, Republican corrupt Republican campaign to steal that election, that was part of the whole process. So that's what I'm talking about, the Millennium Theater, this show that they put on behind the scenes. They're assuming power.
In the same song, you say we're the TV Nation. You mentioned TV Nation. A couple other songs on the CD, Reprieve, mention television and the need to turn the sucker off.
Yeah, it is. It is a powerful mind controlling force. I mean, certainly, in the hands that it's in, which, I'm terrified of TV.
Do you watch it?
No, I really
don't.
You
don't have a TV, or you don't turn on?
I do have a TV, but it's for, renting movies, watching movies, and I never watch the actual TV. I'm remarkably culturally illiterate on that pop TV level, and quite happily so. I feel more balanced as a person since I've divorced my life from TV.
Well, what do you recommend for people who are facing, Bush and Cheney right now and seem to have no hope? Where do you point people?
Wow. I happily live in this sort of subculture. There's hope all around me, at my shows, there's, like we were talking about off mic earlier, a political tabling every night. And there's a real sense of community there, of progressive people, of, active people. And there's just, there's so much that we can do. Simple things like vote. You can take a half hour every couple of years and empower yourself. And the reality of if every progressive person in this country was registered and using their right to vote, we would have a remarkably different government. And that's just reality, We were on this called the Vote Damn It Tour a few years back, and we had a whole slideshow that my friend Susan Elsner helped put together, and it was about voting history, about how hard people fought, activists fought in this country for the right to vote, for women, for African Americans, for, immigrants, et cetera, et cetera. How hard won, the privileges of democracy are, and the fact that we just disregard them these days.
Yeah, that's amazing, isn't it? And there's this big effort to disenfranchise people again, not by the computers, which can do it also, but, these new rules about what you need to do to go in and vote. And those of us who have the privilege of voting, which we all are supposed to have as citizens, to not exercise it is disrespectful, is what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah. First, we need to burn down the offices of Diebold, and then. But they've stolen two presidential elections. I think flat out. I'm asked again and again, like, well, what do you think about the re-election of Bush? This is definitely a sign of, and I say again and again, it's not what happened. Come on, let's be real. It's startling that we let it happen, and it's startling that we're collectively forgetting that it did happen.
Yeah, it's amazing that people didn't pour into the streets and did in Mexico City, for instance.
It is, isn't it? Yeah, we are so disconnected from our power. You know, I mean, the reality of our power as citizens, you know, we've been so, mind melded into thinking of ourselves as consumers and not citizens that we don't realize that we can stop this stuff, mm-hmm. that we can address this stuff, that we don't have to parrot, read the White House press report. We can actually do our own investigative reporting, that we can all speak up in whatever line of work, in whatever office we walk into, you know, that we have this incredible unharnessed power.
Mm-hmm. I'm speaking with Ani DeFranco. This is Progressive Radio. I'm Matt Rothschild. You have a line about turning the wheel of history on this latest CD, Reprieve, which is a line I like. One thing I wanted to ask you, Ani, is that, you know, one great song on Reprieve is Shroud. I really love that song. And you talk about leaving the houses of oppression, if you will. That's not your word, it's mine. But the house of fashion, the house of privilege, the house of TV, the house of conformity and fear and self-importance, which I wanted to ask you about a little bit because I struggle with this myself. I mean, there's a tension between not wanting to be self-important and to recognize, you know, how ephemeral everything is and transient. But if we go too far down that road and know that everything is impermanent, then the question existentially arises, why do it? You know, why engage? And so how do you wrestle between trying not to be self-important and still doing the work?
Well, geez, I think, maybe it's the self in self-important that is the fallacy. You know, that's the sort of stumbling block, I think, for myself anyway, so many of us. Because we are certainly important. We are manifestations of divine energy. You know, we are all God, you know, along with every rock and every tree. And it's that fallacy of individualism, of separation, of the fact that my self is separate from yourself, or that any one self can be more or less important than any other, is, you know, that's when the sort of sickness of ego can divert us. But I think if we understand how incredibly important and gorgeous we all are as one, as cells in one glorious organism, you know, then, you know, the importance of uplifting the whole organism, you know, becomes each of our personal quests.
And you're a quester. That's one of the things I like about you. You've got a line. I don't know if that's a word.
It is now.
You have a line in Reprieve. I know where I'm going and it ain't where I've been. What's behind that? Why are you feel this constant need to be in motion? Is that an artistic thing? Is it a?
I think
just the way you're built.
I think for me, it's just on many levels. You know, personal, artistic, whatever, psychological, philosophical, just change, you know, incorporating new experiences, you know, new knowledge, realizing my own faults, how wrong I can be about something, and really embracing that. And, you know, that to me is, you know, it's the most difficult work, but it's the most rewarding. And so I'm always trying to be present about that.
Well, I wish we could be present for a little longer right now, but we're out of time. Ani DeFranco, her latest CD is Reprieve. Ani, thanks for being my guest today.
Thanks so much.
Today's program is available online at progressive.org. You can also write to us at 409 East Main Street, Madison, Wisconsin, 53703. Our music is by Mufa. Progressive Radio is produced by Elizabeth DiNovella and engineered at Audio for the Arts in Madison, Wisconsin.